Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Sam and Greg on this beautiful-looking Sunday morning. Well, let's do it, man.
It is a game day Sunday.
You gotta love hearing that.
You know?
We got NFL playoff action we're going to be talking about. And also want to mention Josh Matthews. That's the guy's name.
Yep.
We couldn't remember his
name. Athletic director over at Pope.
Pope High School athletic director.
He just took over the man's office.
Hey, first of all, he offered it. He shouldn't have offered it if he had to get back in there and do some work. Had his family with him.
Yeah.
Very nice children he had down. I think it was his son. Maybe a couple kids. But anyway, he couldn't have been nicer and more patient. He got a nice bathroom in his office.
That's a nice setup. That whole setup is very nice over at that school. And they admit to shout out to the three different football teams that came in to be a part of that. The Pope team, Locust Grove, and Carrollton High School. Came all the way from Carrollton to be a part and play roles in that film.
Well, we have got an hour back that we normally lose during the football season. We're going to be here for another hour. And so we've decided to, in this hour, talk more NFL playoff action and also our final thoughts as we lead into the national championship game tomorrow night. Normally, our last hour on NFL football Sunday is we hear from Coach Dan Quinn, who is in with John and Hugh doing his weekly show.
Normal.
That's not the case this past week. So what we do have, though, are a number of comments from not only the coach but also Thomas Dimitroff. So as is the case, let's spend some time talking about some of the things they have said. Now, of course, this is postseason for them.
Of course, the big news is that the departure of all the coordinators.
Exactly. And what their thoughts are on that and some other things. So I tell you what, we have a number of clips. We're just going to fire off, and then we'll give our thoughts afterwards. And the first one, I want to hear from Coach Dan Quinn. And whether or not the question is he going to consult with Matt Ryan on a new offensive coordinator?
Q, to that end, how much will Matt potentially be consulted? It's not the right word.
Right.
Be involved or talked to about what you're going to do?
I think I wanted to make sure he understood that the system that we run isn't changing. So his preparation, his mindset for how we go and attack protections and verbiage and formations, all of that is staying consistent for him. I think that's really important. He has such command of it. And I wanted this to, whatever anxiety he would feel about that, to take that off, to say we're staying within the system. We're just going to feature it differently. So that part, I wanted to make sure he was clear. But like a true Matt Ryan fashion, he said, I know it was a tough decision, but, you know, whatever you do, we got your back and we're ready to go. So that's it's hard, these decisions, because, you know, guys like Sark and, you know, Keith and Marquand or Wade, really, not only really good coaches, really good men. So it's like, it's especially difficult.
All right. It was, you heard our own David Archer with Coach Quinn there.
Coach Quinn.
What's your takeaway from that?
It's a tough decision. Obviously, he, you know, cared a lot about the people who he had in that position. He trusted them in that position. And it's always hard to me when you bring somebody else in, you put them in a position, and now you have to ask them out, does that mean you were wrong? Or does that mean just the things they did were wrong? To me, he's got to get things straight in his mind, you know, to go out and make the move that he has to move the team forward and get the team back to where it was. It's a tough decision that he's facing, I mean, under the circumstances. And as I say before, the sense of urgency goes up as time goes by up there. I mean, he needs to get people in and get it right quickly, you know, the way things are going with this incarnation of the Falcons, unless you want to just, you know, let everybody go. You know, right now you feel like you have enough people in the mix. So now you do have to retool, but you got to make the right moves with the right folks.
What I took away from that was the word different or differently throughout it. Now, he didn't talk specifics.
No.
And you sort of, you know, alluded to, the guy's a great politician.
Yeah.
He's a great politician.
He's good at that now.
But if different or differently means addressing how you attack in the red zone or don't, then I'm cool with that. That's what I would like to think is what he's talking about when he talks about doing differently. If he doesn't want to throw anybody specifically under the bus, okay, fine. But say our red zone offense was anemic, and it has been for the most part because we had this whole discussion going into this season.
Right. We didn't see it in the preseason. Of course, we didn't see enough of the regular players in the preseason to know what we were getting there either.
So that's me. That's what I took away from that. That's what I want to hear, because isn't every team, you have a number of areas you could address, but that's the one with the spotlight on it for this Falcons team and the Falcon fan base. That's, you know, you go to the barbershop, you talk to your friends about your issues with this particular team, and it usually always comes back to that. Well, you mentioned he better hurry up and do it.
Right.
Let's hear him again address talking about the deadline to get that OC in here.
I didn't put a deadline amongst ourselves due to teams that are still playing. Obviously, that's a factor in it. There's no deadline that I have now. Just going to be really thorough in what we're looking for. Scheme fit, culture fit, everything has got to line up just right.
All right, well.
But no deadline. You say it's not going to rush.
Well, here's the thing. You want the right guy, and you got to make sure the right guy is available. You got to talk to some other people and find out if they're on the same page as you. My thing is this.
Because that guy may still be working for a team that's still playing.
Well, if you want to believe what we've read so far, he's not.
He's not. But there could be.
All right. So that comes down. So we're concentrating on the offensive side because we know who's going to be handling the defensive side. So we get the guy in here. You know, who's doing the play calling? They ask him about that, too.
My background in the scheme of what we do and, the style exactly like I'd want to do it. Quite honestly, I like doing it. I've done it before as a defense coordinator and as a head coach some, so just thought that was the best way for us moving forward.
All right. How do you feel about that?
I'm fine with that. You know, he knows a little bit about doing that type thing and what he wants. I'm okay. We just want to see who the choice and selection is going to be.
Anybody out there that you have, like, you'd like to see come or just – kind of a wait and see.
You know, wait and see. I mean, like I said, we've heard names, but, like I said, we still have teams going. We have some teams, like we said, mentioned earlier, we've done a lot with some very young quarterbacks. You know what I mean? I mean, we got some guys who've done a lot with some young quarterbacks. Maybe that might be the direction. You may want to tap into one of those individuals. So, we'll see.
Well, one of the things, by the way, Sam and Greg, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. If you're just tuning in, Sam and I are kind of running down the comments of Coach Dan Quinn postseason. Normally we have a full sort of back and forth he has with Hugh and John. Not the case this week. David Archer talked to him. He came in for a couple different interviews. And so we want to take his comments and also Thomas Dimitroff's and kind of address them individually during this segment. Staying on the offensive side of the ball, we talked about the quarterback, the offensive coordinator, but it all comes down to the protection or lack thereof of Matt Ryan. He commented on that.
Are you comfortable with what you saw? I mean, I know you're going through this 16-game evaluation, which I find fascinating.
I'm comfortable at center and left tackle.
Okay.
In the same way that you had said. And past that, you scrub every bit of it. And so one of the projects we're going through with the staff now is we're all watching the season together.
Yeah, both in sides, order, right?
In order, yeah. Both sides of the ball together. And I wanted the line's perspective, the line guys looking at the defense. I wanted the defensive guys looking at perspective of the offense. And I thought we'll grow as a staff during this moment of difficulty and knowing that everything is out there for everyone to see. Here's this light. Here's what we're shining on it. This is the performance we put out together. So how does those moments and things change to say this should never happen to this brotherhood again in terms of performing this year like we have and finishing with a losing record?
All right. Now you talk about finishing in the red zone, and that to me that starts up front. He said, we're going to scrub this line
right,
and do some things with it. D. Orlando Ledbetter, D. Led, who's joined us so many times, one of the things he always harps on, you got to get some line. Right. You had some changes with that offensive line, and that's been the root of a lot of the problems with this, along with Freeman being injured. That's kind of the root of it. It's been the offensive line.
You know, one of the things that he hasn't mentioned, I'm kind of glad about that, he hasn't brought up the injuries that this team sustained throughout the course of the year. And I think anybody who's follows the NFL – in the NFL, you know that injuries are part of it. You don't want to hang your hat on it. So I was glad to hear he hasn't brought that up. Now, aside from the team, one of the other issues that this team dealt with throughout the year was the loss of games with these, the division foes. And that was one of the things that Coach Quinn brought up.
It starts with the division to me first. You know, what two or three things do you have to do to win the division? Because there are some good consequences that come with that. And those are home games in the postseason. And those are things deeper than making the playoffs. And so, to me, that's where it starts.
All right. Well, you got to get your team together before you can worry about who you're going to beat in the division.
But now you look at your division and you look at a team that everyone's saying may make it all the way to the Super Bowl. So that's tough. And that's kind of what's happened in our division. You know, in recent years, we've had very strong teams that go well in the playoffs and go deep into the playoffs in this particular division. This particular year just seems like we have one that could end up playing here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So, yeah, high priority is always the division, but especially when you have a team that's doing what the Saints are doing right now.
Not only did we get comments from Coach Dan Quinn, we also heard from Thomas Dimitroff, and his, well, as he says, his responsibility towards some of the play of this team this past year.
Considering the depth, there are certain people we thought stepped up, and personally there are other people that didn't step up that we thought were going to step up and thrive for us. So I think when it comes to building the team, that's going to always be something that I'm focused on. But when we talk about the players and where we're putting players, that is an important part of my world as well. So I take responsibility, of course, for that.
All right. Listen, going into this season, as they say on paper, everything looked like it was going to be a pretty good season.
Looked fantastic.
Looked fantastic.
Paper.
So from that standpoint, I don't know who was out there that we didn't get that we had a chance to, meaning that we could point the finger at him. How come you didn't go get this guy or that guy? So I got no real problem with that. I mean, and him taking, you know, again, it gets back to injuries. We lost a lot of key players this past year. But him, Thomas Dimitroff, having the right players in place when we started this season off, I don't know how it could have been done better myself. I mean, I don't have an intelligent response to that and say, this is where it fell through the cracks. You let this guy go or whatever.
No, we couldn't see that. I think the injuries, first of all, it started things off, and a lot of things never got to go really 100% the way they needed to because of that off the very start. You're shuffling people in different places, you know, filling spots with people who's supposed to be in background supporting roles. Now they're in starting roles right from the start of the season. Now, maybe that happens 2-3 games in, but right from the start is what this team was faced with. We talked about offensive line being something that this team needs to improve, obviously, to go forward. The thing is, how do you do it? Are you going to do some trades? Are you going to get some free agents? Are you going to do it through the draft? You're going to go young? So that's a question that that Thomas Dimitroff talked about.
We need to be very mindful of what we can take as far as the money that we have and potentially have, because we have a legit payroll here, of course, and we have to continue to look at that. And we're going to have to make decisions on that as well, pertaining to how we approach free agency, if we can afford certain people, and where we think the value is going to be at the youth side of things.
And that all comes back to the coordinators that we have in place, which we haven't filled yet,
right?
Because they have to go after a certain kind of player.
Right.
And they
right.
say, I want player X, I want player Y, you know, so, you know. I don't really have any much response on that. The one guy you really want to make sure of is taken care of is Grady Jarrett. And he did, as we finish up here, have a comment on that.
We would like to have Grady back for many years to come. He's you know, not only on the field, but what he does off the field for us, he's very important. We put it aside for a little bit through the season, of course, so he could focus on what he needed to focus on. Now we're back at focusing on that as our priority to see, you know, how this proceeds, and I'm confident with it.
That's what everybody wanted to hear.
Rockdale County's finest.
There you go. A friend of the show, Russell Baxter, is going to help us talk NFL. He is up next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. You know, this is his intro music.
Yeah, it is.
Russell Baxter, a friend of the show, coming on with his NFL knowledge. Are you happy that you picked the Supremes as your intro band?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. You haven't gotten to the best Supreme song yet, but you'll get there. So.
Which one is that in your mind?
Oh, it's my favorite song of all time. You Keep Me Hanging On.
All right.
Keep me hanging
Bo
on.
Heard you.
But that's okay, because when you do the Supremes and you go through the other 25 songs that are great, you can be patient.
Can you name the four Supremes?
The four Supremes?
Well, you remember one of them got replaced. She passed away.
I could not. I want to say Mary Wilson. I want to say Diana Ross, and I probably couldn't tell you the rest.
And then Florence Ballard.
Florence Ballard.
But then Florence passed.
D'Artagnan was one of them, right?
Michelangelo and
D'Artagnan. Yeah, got a candy.
My only other answer would have been Joe Green, Elsie Greenwood, Dwight White, and Ernie.
Okay. Now that sounds more like you.
How about the fearsome foursome?
Oh well, Deacon Jones and Lamar Lundy and Merlin Olsen and. Well, you had Jack Youngblood for a smattering there, but you also had Rosie Grier.
There you go. There you go.
Knit one pearl, too.
There you go. There you go.
Listen, before we get into these playoff games for today, we were just listening to a number of clips from Coach Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff about the Falcons season and what's going to happen moving forward. As you look back at this season and have had to comment on what you think they should do moving forward, what would you say?
Defensive depth. That really proved to be their undoing. And you go back early in the year and some of those wild shootout games they wound up losing. The 43-37 game at home to the Saints in overtime. And had to lead that game late in the game and couldn't hold it. And had the lead against the Bengals the following week and lost 37-36 at home. Even when they beat Carolina in week two, 31-24. I know I'm just throwing out a lot of scores, but, you know, last year the criticism came on offense, Steve Sarkisian's first year, and the adjustments with Matt Ryan. But defensively, they were a better football team. This year, I think they would have been a better defensive football team if it weren't for the injuries. You know, numbers are what they are. Matt Ryan threw 35 touchdown passes and only had 7 picks. Those are numbers very reminiscent of his MVP year 2 years ago. So I think it's avoiding the calamity that wound up being on defense. Grady Jarrett missed a little time, not substantial time. But when you lose Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen and Deion Jones basically from the get-go, that's the middle of your defense, and teams exploited them. No Devontae Freeman to kind of wear things down as well. I was surprised they made some of the sweeping changes that they did in terms of coordinators. But defensive depth, one of the reasons I felt so good about the Falcons going into last season was the fact that they did not do a lot in terms of free agency. You know, they plugged a hole on the offensive line. You know, they brought in Justin Bethel. And when I say, I mean, in other words, they had no need to break the bank. They were a seasoned team. They've been in playoffs 2 years in a row. But who would have foreseen losing the caliber of players that they did? And listen, that's the NFL, okay? I mean, no one does have a lot of depth anymore. I certainly understand that. But that's what I think came back to bite them. I think they do a lot of things awfully well, and I won't be surprised if they rebound, if they can stay healthier and not lose the caliber of players that they did.
Russell, I remember you saying that before last season, and a lot of people say make change for the sake of change, and then one thing you applauded that they didn't do that here in Atlanta and that didn't make changes just for the sake of that. That being said, now we're saying that probably the offensive line will need some retooling, and Grady Jarrett may need some help on the defensive side. So now it seems like because there is a sense of urgency. You know, you get to another year or two with this group, and the window begins to close with this team. So, to me, they have to do things and be quicker about it.
Well, yeah, now the game plan changes a little because you are 1 year older and you're 1 year off the season that you had. So, I mean, this is a year-to-year league. I think, you know, you look at it more and more and more, and why is it that there are only – riddle me this, Batman – why are there only two franchises in this league currently that have been to the playoffs more than 2 years in a row?
Wow.
Do you know who they are, right? New England and Kansas City.
The only ones.
Yeah.
The
Rams have been in 2 years in a row now. The Saints have been in 2 years in a row now. Okay, we had 7 teams not make the playoffs that made the playoffs a year ago. Last year, only the Falcons came back from the NFC. We had a slew. I put out a thing yesterday about the slow starts for the 4 playoff teams on Saturday, which got about 600 likes. I was stunned. Okay, but it just Houston 0-3, Colts 1-5, Seahawks 0-2, Cowboys 3-5.
Let me ask you this though. Russell, are also talking about the two tenured most tenured coaches, too, with Andy Reid and Bill Belichick, if I'm not mistaken, too, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, two longest tenured for people who know what you're saying there. Andy Reid's tenure as a head coach never ended after
right.
he left Philadelphia.
Right.
Okay. Bill Belichick's the most with the same team. Okay. By the way, the third guy was Marvin Lewis, who just lost his job.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So my point is, football, watching teams get ready for football season now, and it used to be, oh, it's just New England. They're 2-2 and get off to a slow start every year. Well, a lot of teams getting off to slow starts. And I know we've talked about this on the show numerous times. Training camp is almost obsolete. Training camp is almost like just getting yourself in shape. The preseason is your training camp. Your first four games are your preseason. And then let the chips fall where they may. And this is not coincidental. And look at the teams that are playing today. It's kind of the same thing. The Chargers were 1-2. The Ravens were 4-5. The Eagles were 4-6. The Bears were 3-3 after back-to-back losses to the Dolphins and Patriots. And then went on a run. So, you know, I don't know how much more proof you want than that. And by the way, that also means you got to have a little sustaining power, like the Carolina Panthers, who did not, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, who did not, like the Washington Redskins. But when you have to go through four quarterbacks in about a month, you know, that's a little different situation. So even listen, I have to tell you, there are people out there questioning the Rams and the Chiefs right now because of the way they came down the stretch defensively. And the Chiefs all year, the Kansas City Chiefs, gave up 421 points this year. That's over 26 a game. Here's something to contemplate for everybody. What's the most points ever given up in one season by a Super Bowl champion?
Don't know. What is it?
The New York Giants, 400 in 2011.
Okay.
When they were 9-7, when they gave up more points than they scored, when they had a four-game losing streak in the middle of the season and still came back and beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Well, here, let me stop you real quick here. Russell Baxter joining Sam and Greg here at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Speaking of numbers, I want you to explain this to, let's pretend all of us just got here from Neptune, and you have these numbers to this quarterback who's playing at noon today, well, actually 1 o'clock today, against the Baltimore Ravens. How do you explain Philip Rivers' career when you take his numbers and you put him next to Brady's, you put him next to Peyton's, you put him next to some of the quarterbacks that are playing today in the playoffs and some of the all-time greats? How do you explain this guy's career? Because I'm having a hard time doing it.
Well, he has not had, in many ways, the coaching stability that either Ben Roethlisberger or Eli Manning have had. Certainly not Bill Belichick, okay? This was a team that went into a lull. And he also had his issues as well. You know, Philip Rivers can be very turnover prone. He had a stretch there for a couple of years where the ball was coming out, not just with interceptions. I think at times he tried to do too much. I don't think his supporting cast for a couple of years was very good. Remember, they won four straight AFC West titles from 2006 to 2009. And now they've been in the playoffs. It's only their second playoff appearance since then. You know, it's the age old. It's not all about the quarterback, but I certainly had to give Philip Rivers his due, his resiliency, his toughness. Guess who has the longest active streak in terms of starts?
Yeah,
at the quarterback position right now.
And the guy's missed the fourth quarter.
That's Philip Rivers. He started 13 straight seasons, hasn't missed a game.
Wow.
So now, of course, the defensive end known as Ben McAdoo, who sacked Eli Manning last year, if you know what I mean, knocked him out of action, and he'd still be the starting quarterback if it weren't for that coach's decision, which ultimately, as we know, cost him his job. But I think the thing that people admire the most about Philip Rivers is his resiliency. Now, he hasn't played well the last couple of weeks. Threw a couple picks against the Ravens, threw a couple picks against the Broncos. They don't look like, but the same offensive team the last couple of weeks. But I will also say that the season of the Chargers, this 2018 season, guys, has been about resiliency. They played the first half of the year without Joey Bosa. They played a lot of games down the stretch without Melvin Gordon. Keenan Allen, I mean, some of their other big names, Pro Bowl names, have been absent. So I think Tom Telesco has done a real good job surrounding Phillip Rivers with a lot more talent than he's had in years past.
Yeah. And playing so many games on the road, if you want to consider that. The home games are like road games for those guys.
Well, I got corrected by somebody yesterday. I was making the joke that they were I forgot that the Chargers actually played a game in London this year, one of their home games.
Right.
So I was given that the wrong number and so on. But they're sensational away from Los Angeles. And of course, they play, I keep on saying this, they play in a Dunkin' Donuts in Los Angeles.
Yeah, they do.
That's not very big. But to their credit, one at Seattle this year, one at Pittsburgh, one at Kansas City. 7-1 on the road this year. With the lone loss, ironically enough, in Los Angeles.
Go figure that. Quickly before we get away, we got Philadelphia and we got a guy named Foles, quarterback at playoff time. Worked for him last year.
It certainly did. Of course, Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount worked for them last year as well. And I think a lot now more is on the shoulders of Nick Foles than it was a year ago. Their offense was humming, especially those last two games. And I don't want to take anything away from him because he was sensational. But I always go back to that Super Bowl where he threw for 373 yards, and he threw one pick. If you remember the pick, it was a downfield deflected, Daron Harmon off a deflection, I think it was. He played great in that game. He caught the touchdown pass as well. But they hung a 164 on the Patriots on the ground.
Yeah.
So can the Eagles run the football in the postseason like they couldn't in the regular season? Guys, last year only two teams in the league had more rushing yards. This year, only four teams had less.
Russell, we're up against it, but as you can hear, you ask and you shall receive. As we tell you to enjoy your day, Bo's decided to serenade you with your favorite song. Enjoy the action.
By the way, there's a lot of other people who have done a version to this. You're welcome to apology, so thank you.
You go, Russell Baxter. We appreciate you getting up and bringing the knowledge man, a friend of the show. We will be back with him. In the meantime, our final thoughts on not only playoff action but the national championship. It's Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Good morning. It's a game day Sunday morning. How you feeling, man?
Good.
You all right?
Wonderful.
Ready for these games today?
Ready for the games today.
Hey, you know what I didn't mention? I didn't finish up. I remember I asked you earlier about the decade, to give me a decade.
Yeah.
You know, on this date.
Yeah.
If you weren't listening earlier, you know, this is one of the stupid things I do throughout the show. One of the many stupid things I do is the happened on this date. And I got one from the 70s.
Right.
And you didn't know that this was the date that Ted Turner purchased the Atlanta Braves for a reported, here's the part, $12 million.
Whoa.
1976, it is reported that Ted Turner had spent only $12 million, which we figured he had on him.
Oh, yeah, no problem. He was already
the Braves.
You know, and I remind people, he was already in the building. If you go back and watch 715, when Hank Aaron hit 715 and he's running around the bases, there was a billboard on the wall out in center field.
That's true.
That when the numbers changed, it was a Turner billboard already inside.
Was that
the
his father who owned that company?
Yep.
They handed it down to him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the 90s also on this date. The things that happened on this date in the 90s. 94. This is the anniversary of Nancy Kerrigan getting it on the knees.
Was it this time of year?
It was before the Olympics.
Before the Olympics.
So the Olympics were probably coming up in February.
Olympic trials.
Yeah. In 94, I think it was Lillehammer.
What?
Exactly. This is the day that Tanya Harding's bodyguard went after Nancy Kerrigan. This is also the day.
And you know what? In a creepy way, people tuned in to figure skating. Because it had taken
on. Well, it was because of Tanya Harding.
It had taken on a WWE kind of feel. And so it's like.
Well,
folks started watching who ordinarily wouldn't pay attention to
it. If you remember back in the day, they used to do stories on a couple different athletes and to make you watch, to be a part of that two-week TV show.
Right.
So let's start introducing the audience to these guys, and they're going to be competing with each other. So that was one. The other one I remember forever was Dan and Dave. Remember
right.
them two?
Right.
And then one of them fell, and he was skating for his sister who had just passed, and then the guy fell. I think they were figure skaters, something like that. Not figure skaters, like speed skaters, excuse me.
Okay, okay.
But Dan and Dave, that was one. But anyway, that's what they were doing with Nancy and Tanya. Lenny Wilkins was, he became the winningest coach in NBA history on this day back in 95.
Remember him lighting that cigar?
Yep. Yeah, 939 was the record.
Yep.
That happened on this date. And Don Sutton, inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Okay.
See, the reason I was tying this in, because we had a lot of Atlanta connections with this. You had Don Sutton going in. You had John Smoltz going in on this day. Smoltz, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Craig Biggio. And so, anyway, I didn't get those off my chest. I wanted to just put a seal to that information, that insignificant information. Put that there. These games today, man, how do you feel about it? Because I got what I want. Only thing I want, I don't care about the first game. I don't care who wins. I'm good with the Chargers moving on. You know how I feel about Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
That would be a better story, I think.
I think that's where I'm leaning. I mean, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them to pull it out of Baltimore. But they're going to be home. The Chargers have to travel. Like I said, they play well.
But they play pretty good on the road.
On the road, but they're going to have a good defensive effort. And let's see what happens. I like what the Ravens have been able to do. And I think, they got their best chance playing at home today.
My thing with this game is this. We got a whole lot more Lamar Jackson to watch. I love being a part of and seeing greatness. And Phillip Rivers finally making it to the promised land, even if he gets to a Super Bowl, that's cool for me. Because he hasn't gotten there. And he's been that guy. And yes, he's been kind of mercurial throughout his career. But still, having to make the change this year. And under all this duress that they have there playing in L.A. And nobody wants to be there on his team. And yet, to be where they are, I'm good with them moving forward. Of course, I want the Bears to beat the Eagles later on. But yesterday I got what I wanted. I wanted to see Andrew Luck. I got that. And I didn't want to see Seattle. I'm good moving forward with this weekend. But this is the best weekend in football.
And who you got tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, man. I want Clemson. And I want that to happen because eventually I want to get back to the argument we have about him taking over for Nick Saban, even though Saban's going to be there for a little bit. He needs to stay and make Clemson what Alabama is right now.
He had to be there 50 years.
Whatever.
Yeah, to be there 50 years for that to happen.
He needs to do. He can do what Saban has done in Alabama if he stays there and builds it up.
I don't think he can get to where Alabama is, but he could be a strong program today and maybe lay a great groundwork for going forward. But I still think, he wins, especially if he wins tonight and if Saban steps forward, he will still be the first phone call that Alabama makes. Unless he comes out and says,
He ain't going nowhere.
But I still think Alabama will call him.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Forget about the call. Do you think he will go? Let's ask you this. Forget about the call, because I agree with you. Everybody's going to call him. He's going to get some calls from the NFL.
You know,
the call ain't got nothing to do with it. That's not what you're talking about.
He's mentioned Alabama. The only call is the Alabama call.
You're saying he wants that call? Because that's different.
Call. I think he still may want the Alabama call.
No, he doesn't want that call. Why would he not want that? Why?
That's a school.
So?
That's a school.
No, it ain't a school. His school is Clemson right now.
No, his school is Alabama.
His school is Clemson.
Hey.
His school is Clemson.
His school is Alabama.
And for you to sit here and say, well, he's going to get the call. Well, getting a call, sure. I can think of 10 other schools that will call him.
But they won't have the meaning. Those schools, he would definitely stay when those schools call. But if Alabama calls, that could be the one that he still goes for. I mean, especially if he beats Alabama again tomorrow night.
Yeah.
If Clemson beats Alabama again tomorrow night, it's a sealed deal. When Saban steps away, Dabo Swinney will get the phone call from Tuscaloosa.
Again, what getting the phone call don't mean
No,
it doesn't mean nothing. I'm asking you to tell me he wants that phone call. Then we got another argument to go to because I don't believe that's the case. And I think here's another
component. Why would he not want the phone call?
Because he got a great program. He's building up at Clemson. Here's another thing you forget about. Urban Meyer's off the map, which means recruiting for him is going to be a little bit easier in regions that Urban dominated because he just beat Nick Saban and he is who he is. He got a couple rings. That's, I think, another reason for him to stay at Clemson. And it will be that much easier to build up a recruiting base in this region where Urban and Nick Saban used to volley back and forth between folks. Mm-mm. I think with Urban off the map, for me, makes his life a little bit easier.
Maybe.
Especially if he wins.
I don't think he gets that many folks that Urban Meyer will be attracting anyway. But I just think, you know, well, like you said, he has his own following. And because Clemson already recruits
dude,
this
he
area.
Gets, I'm talking about top
he
recruits.
This area. Top he gets recruits. Top recruits.
Again, and
he would get even winning.
And he would get even more if Urban Meyer, they decide recruits. We don't want to go to Ohio State because Urban's not there. Hey, let's go play at Clemson.
From where? Not from
Wherever.
Georgia. Not
Wherever.
From Georgia because Clemson recruits Georgia extra well. You look at that roster, you always find 15 to 20 kids from Georgia on that roster for Clemson.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.